Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spider. So to kick this one off, we're going to go back to a couple comments from last week's episode. I had a few folks chime in. I want to probably going to end up doing with this one because I haven't done it before, is end up producing a video on it because, again, as I've said before, a lot of times the podcast is a great place for me to try out new ideas, to toy around with different topics, and basically be able to get out as much information as I can on them. And then sometimes I look at them and go, you know what, this would make a good video too. But then it comes down to trying to pare down that information into something a little more bite-sized, a little, you know, for the shorter form. Because the videos, you can't ramble on the video for an hour or more because it's just not that type of, you got to grab their attention. And again, I've noticed with, especially when you look at the numbers, which I don't spend a lot of time doing, but it is interesting when you go and you put a video up and it's 20 minutes long, you know, like, oh, people are going to, you know, I always have the stuff I want to do in the beginning, the middle, the end, I, you know, cover stuff that maybe I missed or some extra information. And it always amazes me how many people start the video and then maybe 10 minutes into it, they check out. And so I think with the podcast, I'm going to get a little into this in a moment, the long form allows you to kind of know the audiences. You know, a lot of the times you folks are doing other things. You're driving to work, you're feeding your tarantulas, you're doing maintenance, you're cleaning, whatever it may be. It's kind of background noise, which is fine, but it's at least getting played, at least getting some, you're getting somewhat exposed to the stuff I put into it. So anyway, couple quick comments before we jump into one comment, which I think kind of hit, it really kind of resonated with me because it's been something I've been wrestling with as far as the podcast is concerned. But first one is from Ian Spiderboy. Thanks for including Janiculata's best beginner, in my opinion. Also would leave a vote for T. Voggins. Good growth, easy care, and absolutely stunning. And Jennifer posted awesome episodes. Some other great beginners I can think of would be D. Penelorus, T. Albopilosis, and T. Voggins. In my experience so far, they've had decent growth and are easy to care for. And I really appreciate this because, again, when I do these types of podcasts, and I say at the end, you know, please chime in. That's not just perfunctory. I'm not just trying to be nice. Like, please chime in. I really would love these to be more interactive where we start the next episode with, all right, here's what I said. What did you guys say? Because I never want it to be just my opinion. Sure, I think I have a decent amount of experience. Just writing, making videos about them and doing podcasts about them, I think it causes me to think about things in a different way. But I'm one person. It's always more powerful when you hear from other people. And all three of those species at one point were considered for this list. Now, I left B. pentalorus off only because when I got mine, she was already a decent-sized specimen. She was probably an inch and a half at that point, maybe even larger. And I realized that being a smaller species, the slings are really small, and I was trying to shy away from the really teeny-tiny slings. But Jennifer was not the only person to mention B. pentalorus. Somebody commented on one of my videos, hey, I like the podcast. D. pentalorus would be another one that I would recommend. So D. pentalorus, I can't speak to it personally, but again, this is why I reach out, because other folks came forward and said, hey, I got it. It was a good one for me to raise up. T. albopilosis was another one I almost had on there. I had my T. albopilosis, my regular T. albopilosis, grew rather slowly. My Nicaraguan grew rather quickly. And over the years, I've had many, many, many folks chime in. And speaking of above average or at least medium growth rate for their albopilosis. So I would have no problem with recommending that one as well. And T. voggins was the other one I was going to recommend because I did have a sling T. voggins that I have raised up. It grew rather quickly. And I've heard other folks say, you know, they're incredibly, incredibly hardy spiders. And I've had other folks chime in and say, hey, you know what? I raised these up and it didn't take very long for me to have that, you know, robust female or male, if that's the case. So I would add all of those to that list. As again, if anybody else wants to chime in with theirs, it's never too late. Sometimes we go back and revisit topics. Now, the last comment I got, I went in to check today on the comments. So the way Spotify works is you have to approve the comments. I approve everything, whether it's negative or positive. Luckily, most of it's positive, but I got this one from 1277. It's obviously just somebody just typed in some room rules, but hey, Tom, feel like a lot of listeners are more advanced keepers. If you want to cover a beginner topic, maybe incorporate that as a segment rather than a full episode, not trying to be snarky. And I didn't take it as being snarky, but it did strike a chord because it is something that I wrestle with the podcast. It is something I'm very cognizant of and I worry about at times, but I feel like I'm kind of stuck in a spot here. So let's break this down a little because I do think moving ahead, and just to be completely transparent, the last time Billy and I, we usually what I do is on Sundays, I sit down, I record the podcast, I put it up, and then we go for a walk, and usually the first question he has, what'd you do your podcast on today? Because a lot of times when I walk up this room, I'm going to be completely honest, I don't know what I'm going to do the podcast on. I kind of walk around the room. I do some feeding. I let stuff kind of naturally evolve. If there's something going on in the room that kind of spawns a topic, which is what happens a lot, or what I'll end up doing is answering comments, and somebody will comment and be like, oh, this is perfect. That's kind of where I get the ideas from it now. It used to be back in the day, I had a notebook full of ideas. And the thing has been around for a while. So I was telling Billy that now that we're on the 7th year, 6 plus years, I actually looked up the other day to see how many episodes were done. This will be I believe the 314th episode. So 314 episodes. I told her my fear is, or not fear, but it's just reality, that eventually there's going to come a point where I don't have much left to say. I feel like my whole message for the last 10 years through all of the Tom's Big Spider stuff has been that keeping tarantulas is not very difficult at all. And sure, like any hobby, any new hobby you join, there is going to be a learning curve. I don't care if it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be one that involves animals or pets. Any hobby, there's a learning curve. And for those of us who like jumping from hobby to hobby, that's a fun part. When you're learning about it, you're reading about it, whether you know you're collecting records and you're learning all the different places you get records, the grading of the records, how to clean the records, whatever it may be. And I'm just throwing out records because I was talking to one of my students about who's collecting records and what you know you have to do to kind of do that nowadays. Whatever it may be, there's going to be a learning curve. And I think for a lot of people, that period's fun because you're out there, you're watching videos, you're listening to podcasts, you're reading articles, you're amassing as much information as you can as you start to build your own experience, your own background knowledge to the point where suddenly you're not watching as many YouTube videos. You're not going through and listening to the podcast anymore because you don't need it. And I think for some people, the nice thing about the podcast, which is different again from the videos, is the fact that a lot of folks just put it on for background noise. It's fun just listening to folks talk about things that you're interested in, whether it's something you know or not. So I do think that, like any hobby, there's a learning curve, but it's not with tarantulas. And the one thing I've tried to really impart to people over the years, and I love when people come up and go, yeah, you know what? You're right. There really isn't much to this, especially when compared to other animals out there, like reptiles or even tropical fish. If you look into tropical fish and, you know, if folks who keep saltwater tanks have coral, the amount of information that there is out there to digest, to weed through different ways of doing it, it's insane. With tarantulas, it's really not. Sure, we have people that pop up every once in a while and come up with quote-unquote new techniques and new ways to keep them that could make things more complicated if you want to go that route. If you do, all more power to you. But overall, they're very simple to keep. And I'm not going to go through all the reasons why I've done that before. But I do think that sometimes I worry that hanging around this long and doing the podcast as long as I have, I'm somehow undermining or diluting my message. I'm saying, hey, you know what? These are really easy, but yet I've somehow found 6 years worth of material, 6+ years worth of material, 313 episodes worth of material to talk about with these guys. And that is something I worry about. And the other day, again, talking with Billy, I said, you know, there's going to be a point where I'm just like, this is it. It's enough. I have nothing left to say. There are times, and I will freely admit this, I think I've admitted this before, where I sit down, I come up with what I think is an amazing podcast topic. I take my notes, I record the topic, and then realize after I've recorded it, I've covered it before. This has happened a couple times. I think I mentioned the infamous Piecelotheria one, where I did a Piecelotheria genus review, and then a year or so later, I'm like, I should do a Piecelotheria genus review. And to make things even worse, anybody that wants to go back and check this, it's still like this because I can't replace the file. I did the second Piecelotheria genus review, and I went, all right, you know what? I've got some updates. I picked up some new species. It's a review. People will enjoy it. They love Piecelotheria. And when I posted it, I posted the old one. So the old Piecelotheria one, or the original Piecelotheria one, was posted twice. So talk about repeating yourself. It was the same dang podcast, which was embarrassing as heck when I figured it out. Somebody finally messaged me like, I think you have two of the same episodes. I'm like, no, I did a different one. Nope, I never posted the other one. So there are times, and that's when you start to, as somebody that doesn't do this for money, if I was doing it for money, I wouldn't care. You can regurgitate all you want. All you're trying to do is keep the audience there so you can get the ad revenue. I'm not doing it for money. I don't care about the money. It's not what I do it for fun. It's enjoyable. It's, you know, I get to kind of, it's kind of creative in a way. I do love educating. I do love teaching. I do love the fact that I can hear from other people on it. So there's that part of it. But without that need, I don't need to do this. Sometimes I will freely admit there are days like this morning. I got up, I was sitting down on my fat butt playing video games. And I'm like, do I really have to do a podcast right now? Although this one, I already had the idea for what I wanted to do. But there are days where I don't feel like doing it. But then I do. And I always feel better after I do it. But back to what our original question here, it's a balancing act for me. I've always found it to be a balancing act to try to, you know, somebody's going to invest this much time in a podcast, it's got to be entertaining. And I do feel like the biggest part, the most difficult part of the balancing act is try to provide information for those just coming into the hobby, as well as providing topics that may interest folks that have been in the hobby for a while. Now, to get back to the comment, the person who left the comment feels like a lot of the listeners are more advanced keepers. And I would not argue that we don't have a lot of advanced keepers on here. That's one thing I was saying to Billy the other day that I was actually surprised how many folks still listen to this podcast I've been interacting with for years who could probably do a podcast of their own. They have the information. They know it. So that means a lot. And I do always have those folks in my mind when I'm putting something out that's exclusively for beginners. However, one thing I have to completely disagree with, it's not all advanced keepers. And quite frankly, in order to grow this podcast or at least keep it running, I'm sure a lot of folks do get to the point where they're like, I've heard all this before, and they move on. We are constantly bringing in new blood with the podcast. A large part of my audience is indeed beginners. I'm contacted almost daily by people who are brand new to the hobby that stumbled on the podcast and are using these episodes as a reference, which is exactly what I want these for. Some of these episodes are meant to, you know, this is why I don't look at numbers. Some of them you come out that you don't get a lot of people listening to them, but over time you watch that number build, because what's happening is people are discovering, going, oh, I am about to get a sling. This is this episode about the best ones to start up. This is perfect for me right now. That's what it's there for. I'm always thinking in terms of longevity, the long game. Are there going to be folks that later on find this podcast because of that? And I can tell you, a lot of our listeners discovered the podcast when they looked up a topic like beginner slings, like molting, signs of molt, things like that, and they stumble upon it. And I can't tell you how many folks go, oh my gosh, I was looking for a list of beginner species and your podcast came up. I've never listened to a podcast before, and this is awesome. Now I'm going through. That's exactly what I'm looking for. That's the type of stuff that brings in new blood. And quite frankly, the whole reason I started doing all this stuff to begin with was to help the beginners that are getting into the hobby and are being confused by and bombarded by so much different conflicting information. It was always about, let's grab these folks and say, hey, it's not that difficult. Listen, here's what I've gone through using my own experiences. This will work for you as you get more into the hobby. You want to switch things up and look at other people. Feel free, but here I want them to be able to look at this information and trust it. So I think that's something that kind of, I won't say strike a nerve, because it wasn't like, oh, are you kidding me? But it was more like it fed into something that I've actually been worrying about, which is, at what point does the podcast become redundant? At what point do we jump the shark, so to speak, and become irrelevant? I never want it to come to that. I never want a point when I'm sitting there just dragging myself up here, doing a topic that I've already covered three or four times, has already been done ad nauseum. I think we have enough going on in the hobby occasionally. Even this weekend or the last couple of weeks, I've been talking to some folks that got something really cool going on that I'm really excited about, that I can't wait to promote. We'll have some new topics there. There's always some things here and there, but I do worry about that point. And then I get comments like these, and it's just, again, I don't want folks... This isn't a call for folks to run and go, oh no, I'm very realistic in how I look at things. And this is just, it's a comment that kind of mirrored some of the things I was thinking myself. So to be clear, yes, some of the Tom's Big Spiders content is going to be for beginners. Yes, there are going to be whole episodes for it. I try sometimes to mix things up to give something a little bit to everybody, but quite frankly, when we start hitting the 40-minute mark, I'm done. Like, that's the point where I'm starting to count down the minutes, because my voice is starting to go. I've been up here, usually if it's 40 minutes, I've been up here for about an hour and a half, 2 hours doing the actual recording of the podcast between notes and everything else. I don't feel like doing anything else after that. So again, I kind of, with the podcast, and one of the reasons I like the long form is I can use as much time as I want. Do I feel bad that if people are bored by it? I do. I want everybody to be able to listen to these and be excited about them. And even if it's something they know, I want them to be excited about, which is why I like the other part of the podcast that I love, that it makes it worthwhile for me, because this can be a selfish endeavor too. I always envisioned that with the podcast, it would be a way for me to connect with other hobbyists and to hear their experiences and input as well, which is why, if you notice on a lot of these, I put out calls for folks to chime in on their experiences. So hopefully together we can build a better, more thorough database of this information. So Tom says these are the best slings. It's not just Tom. It's a bunch of people chiming in. That's what I'm looking for. So that's why I reach out, and that's why I wish that folks who have been in the hobby for a while would help me out here and chime in with some stuff. And again, I feel like this is a very pertinent comment to me. I comments like this really make me, it's good feedback, because now I know that I'm right. There are people out there, and my hunches were correct, that are advanced keepers that are sitting there going, you know what, I don't want to listen to a whole beginner episode. And I totally respect that. But what would help me out is for folks, again, I'm not going to stop doing stuff that appeals to beginners, because that's the whole reason I started. Sure, I've gone on. I mean, when I first started Thomas Big Spider stuff, I wasn't in the hobby all that long. A lot of it was just sharing how I was finding information and what I was doing with it. Now that I've been doing it for a while, I've got that experience. But again, I want to hear from other people. So for advanced keepers that have kept a lot of these slings, chime in. Do you agree? Do you disagree? That's really helpful when I do those episodes, those beginner episodes, to have beginners be able to go down, look at those comments, and go, all right, he's not talking out of his butt. There are other people that agree with him and say the same thing. So please, for the advanced guys, help me out here. The other thing is, what I've said this a couple times, you can always chime in with topic ideas. If you have ideas that you want me to cover, feel free to chime in. That's incredibly helpful. A lot of the episode ideas that I've come up with aren't mine. There are people coming in going, hey, I would love for you to cover this. And as I've explained before, I'm not the type to go off half-cocked with, all right, I don't really know how to answer this, or I don't have a lot of information about this, but I'm going to go talk about it in a podcast. No. What'll happen is sometimes people give me ideas that I think are good ideas, but I don't have the experience or reference, or it's something I need to do research on to be able to talk about. And I can't tell you how many times I've done podcasts years after I came up with the idea, because then I felt like I was ready. So please don't think that if you're giving me one and I don't jump right on the idea that I'm ignoring it or saying it's a bad idea. No, I have a notebook of things that I keep, and I have a couple right now that I'm not ready to do yet. With time, I should be. That helps me out. I think if anything, over the years, I've proven the fact that I do listen to the people that chime in. I love reading comments and names, because I know people like hearing their names. I would like, if I listened to a podcast and chimed in, I'd want to hear that, you know, somebody discuss my question and answer me. I think people appreciate that. But to do that, I need feedback. I need people to chime in, whether email or leave. The easiest way to do it is leaving comments on YouTube. I can do it there, or Spotify now has the comment section. It's great. But help me out here, guys. What do you all, and this will be our question for next podcast, and I really do hope people chime in on this one, because, you know, either way, what do you think? What would you like to hear about? Again, there's not all that. I'd love to do more on breeding. I get a lot of folks, can you talk more about breeding? Here's the deal, guys. Once I got to the point where I was ready to do a lot of breeding, I was spending so much of my time with videos and podcasts, there's not enough room. I have a family. When I'm upstairs in the tarantula room working with tarantulas, I am basically sequestered from the rest of my family for that time period. So the last time I was doing breeding, I was sitting up here for hours watching these spiders go at it. And while the whole world was going on downstairs, or, you know, away from me, it sucks. So it's eventually, when I decide that the time has come to stop the podcast, when I get sick of doing the videos and just say, hey, I just want to go back to being somebody that keeps spiders by myself, then I'll probably do more breeding. And maybe at that point, after I do some breeding, I want to get back to stuff. I don't know. But I would love to do that. Species-specific ones, I like doing the occasional species-specific podcast. I think the problem is, for people that are into, there's like three camps. One, they already raised them, they know it. Two, they've never heard of it before or are interested, so it's, they like the information, or they're looking for the spider and they're interested. Or three, the third camp is, I don't keep the species, I have no interest in the species, this is boring, I don't need to hear about it. Plus, let's call it as it is, guys. The care of many of these spiders is so similar, it sounds like the same podcast, just with different scientific names. So what would you all like to hear me talk about? What are some ideas? The summer's coming up where I have a lot more time on my hands to spend on this type of stuff. So it's not as stressful during the like regular year where I have my weekend and a good portion of it is spent doing spider stuff. What would you guys like to hear? For the person who chimed in on this one, what are some topics you'd like to hear me cover? What are some topics that you like? Give me some feedback. What are you guys enjoying? What are you not enjoying? For beginners, how many folks out there are beginners? Do you appreciate this stuff? For folks that are advanced keepers, why do you still listen? Is it one of those deals where it's just a habit? Is it just because it's background noise? Do you genuinely like hearing maybe a different perspective on how you're doing? Chime in, guys. Give me some info. This is going to be, you know, you can look at all the data you want, all the stats, and the stats look good. You know, we're still bringing people in, which is fantastic. But again, this is your show, not mine. I can talk about stuff, and today I'm going to talk about something that interests me that I want to talk about. And obviously, all of this interests me because I'm doing spiders. But at the end of the day, what do you guys want to hear about? So whoever the person's name is that left that comment, I really do appreciate it because, again, it does kind of jive with some of the things I've been feeling. It does back up the fact that I do worry at times that people that have been doing this for a while are going to be like, you know what, I'm done with it, which I do think in some ways is in the natural order of things. I do think that some folks grow up, they move on, and they just don't need it anymore, which is fine. But again, we need to be able to bring in that new blood, and that new blood are the folks that are just getting into the hobby, that find a source of information that they feel like they can trust, that simplifies things in a way that they can go into the hobby feeling confident and grow in the hobby, and then eventually be one of those advanced people that doesn't want to hear it anymore. So please feel free to chime in. Thanks for all the comments on this one. As you guys have probably read from the main title, I'm going to have to put something on to tip people off that it doesn't start off this way, but we're going to be talking about, you know, old tarantulas and stuff. And basically, I have a story I want to share, and it falls in line with another story that I've shared before. And then just kind of, again, I'm going to be looking for feedback on this one. But long story short, I recently did an episode about realistic lifespans of tarantulas and how we can sometimes impact that, how I think a lot of the stuff that's out there is just, if I put up right now, if I took a brand new species and I went, this species lives 15, the females live 15 to 20 years, you can bet your butt that within a year, 20 other people would copy that and use it whether they knew it was true or not. So, and a lot of times when we get these new species, it's conjecture. So I really wanted to discuss what have I been seeing in my own collection? What are some of the max ages I've got? And it's funny because when I was putting together this, one of the species I was looking at is Harpactra caffreriana that recently passed away. She was about 8.5, 9, but I realized that she was like full grown very early on and spent a lot of time as an adult female. So I'm like, oh, that makes a little more sense. And then some of my other Harpactera right around the 8 to 10 mark. And then I looked at my Harpactera pulchropes, which is one of my favorite all-time tarantulas in my collection. I absolutely love this female, one of the sweetest spiders I've ever had. She was the one I've shared before this is when I really got serious into Tom's Big Spider stuff, because I was doing a lot of care videos on stuff that spiders had been around for a long time, because I didn't like to spend a lot of money on spiders. I wasn't one of these people that wanted to go out or had to go out and be the first person to have something so I could brag about. But I had seen H. pulchropes. I was dying to get an H. pulchropes. And finally, in 2013, I found somebody that was selling sexed juvenile females and slings. I picked up a sexed juvenile female. Long story here, he sent me the guy tried to send me a sling first and apparently screwed somebody over too. Somebody else overdid the same thing and then tried to say, oh, it was a mistake. Anyway, I got my sexed female sling in mid-2013. And she rapidly became one of my favorite spiders. First, it was just because she was so beautiful, and I was a little excited to have something that not many people had at that time. This was when they were just starting to get popular. I think it was like maybe the third batch of spiders. After the first group came in, they had babies. Second group came in. I think this was the third. The spiders were the prices were creeping down. And I raised this girl to an adult, and easily one of my favorite spiders. Well, while I was putting together the notes for this, I was, you know, looking at her, reminiscing about how she is quite old. I mean, she was probably at least several months old, if not a year old or more, when I got her. And then we were going on like 11 years with her. Like, that's a pretty good lifespan for a Harpactera species. But I did notice she was starting to slow down, and I was worried that the end was coming. Well, the other night, I go up into the tarantula room. I'm up here constantly, even when I'm not like working up here for a while. I constantly pop up and just check on things. And I looked in on her, and she did not look good at all. She was in the middle of her enclosure. She was on her webbing, and she looked half curled in, almost in a death curl. So I'm like, oh God, this isn't good. So I take the cage, the enclosure down. She's got a full water dish. I usually, with Harpactera species, keep one corner wet at all times. And I usually go ahead and moisten the, I'll spray a little water on the webbing because they'll drink directly from the webbing when I feed her. Now, the last time I went to feed her, she did not eat, which was odd for her because she's always a good eater. She wasn't overly plump either. She was good size, but not overly plump. So I get her out and I take a little water and I squirt it in front of her, and she actually got down and started to drink. So I'm like, that's interesting. And then I happen to notice one of her legs is gone. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? I look closely. It isn't. Now, they can pop off their legs in a way where they close it off and it doesn't bleed out. This looked like it was torn off in a jagged way right up against her body. And there was definitely, she was bleeding. She was bleeding out. And I freak. I'm like, how and why did this happen? I'm looking around the enclosure. I can't find a leg anywhere. She's not, so she's drinking. So what I did is I did my cornstarch trick, ran down, grabbed a cotton swab, grabbed some cornstarch, and she was a total sweetheart as I put the cornstarch on the stub to stop it from bleeding. We stopped it from bleeding. She was drinking, and I'm like, okay, hopefully this was just a hiccup. She's going to do okay. But in the back of my mind, I had already seen signs that she was in old age, that, you know, that her time was probably coming, and I was really worried. So at the end of the evening, she climbed up. There was a plastic plant that she had webbed over. She climbed up. She kind of perched on the plastic plant and just kind of sat there very calmly. And I put a little more cornstarch on the weeping wound to make sure it was, because she gave me a better view of it. Took a little bit of video of her and then put it back on the thing and let her rest. I came up the next morning. She was in the exact same spot she had died. So I was, you know, again, did I know it was coming? Yes. But did I expect her to spontaneously rip off a leg? I can't find a, the only leg I found looked like an old part of an old molt, and it was part under the webbing. So I don't think that was the leg. After I removed her body and went through and picked around, could not find the leg to save my life. So I don't know what happened. Again, she wasn't eating. She was starting to slow down. Definite signs of old age. I don't know why or how she managed to tear her leg off. Now, what this made me think about was way back in October of 2016, I had purchased an adult female avicularia. I think it was from Jamie's Tarantulas. She was an adult. I believe she had already been bred before. So she was an older female. But at this time, I was guessing this female was probably, you know, 6-7 years old or so. At this time, I was still operating under that assumption that avicularia species live to be 12, or females live to be 12 to 15 years old. So it was a couple years. She had molted, I think, once in my care. And then she was stopping to eat. I thought she was in premolt. I went to check on her one day, and I noticed on the top, she was curled up in the top of her webbing, and there was a bunch of wet stuff underneath. And I was like, that's weird. How did she get water up there? And then I realized she was missing a leg. She had torn a leg off. Closer examination, she had actually ripped two legs off. And just like the polkerpes, the legs weren't ripped off evenly where she was able to close it off. They were actively weeping. There was a puddle of hemolymph underneath her. So she was bleeding out. I tried giving her some moisture. She was dead within an hour. And it was... I want to say devastating. It was devastating because she was a beautiful female. Looking back at it as years went on, and I started realizing these guys don't live nearly as long as some people say they do, I realized she was probably in her old age when this happened, but it was still freaky to see that she just ripped off two of her legs. I remember I posted it up because this is one of those deals with, I wanted to hear from folks. Have you ever experienced this before with any species where they just spontaneously rip off their legs? What is the deal? And I had people asking, you know, was there something in the enclosure? There was nothing. I went through the enclosure. I looked for crickets. Was it possible, you know, she had gone in the premolt and a cricket had munched on her? We exhausted every possibility, never figured it out, except over the years, and this is, again, why I love putting videos up, because people continue to find them, and they continue to chime in. Over the years, I've had other people chime in with their stories about their spiders spontaneously losing their legs, and in many of them, they were older spiders. So with the Harpactera polkerpes being a much older female, I believe she was close to 12 now, probably, estimation, 11 or 12, so she was an older girl, she lived a nice long life, had been an adult female for quite some time. Was it just a coincidence that it was an old lady that did this, or is this something that happens sometimes with the older spiders? And if so, why? It is one of the most, it's horrifying in one respect, because nobody wants to see their pet dismembered. It's awful. Like, you go in there, the thing's leaking with the avicularia. It was terrible. That was my first time ever experiencing anything like that. But at the same time, it's fascinating what happened. What made this spider, for some reason, pop its leg off in a way that ended up leading to injury and it bleeding out? Because they can pop them off. Like, if a leg is, if they have a bad molt, I'll have people contact me saying, you know, one of its legs, it's frozen, it's in a bad molt, and should I pull it off? And I'm like, listen, if the rest of the molt's off, it's just that leg. If it's giving them a hard time, it'll pop it off on their own. I can't tell you how many people come back, yep, it popped it, I found the leg off, it's totally fine. That's not the case here. These things are torn off. What is going on? And then the other mystery is, where the heck did the leg go? So I never found the leg. So I wonder if this isn't something that happens with them when they get older. It's weird. I mean, this is obviously, I don't want to get misquoted on this, but just when you look at something like this and you try to figure out why would this happen, one thing I thought of is maybe it's just a way of ending it. You know, we're on our way out. Boom, I'm going to bleed out. I don't know. Do I think that's the case? No, it's just something that popped into my head. Or is it a way of them just kind of checking out on their own terms? I don't know, but I would like to hear from folks who have experiences. I'm hoping, again, I don't know if we'll get a lot of people chiming in on this one, but I do know that with that avicularia video over the years, and I've had people email me with similar stories, a lot of times it's an older spider. There were two different people that chimed in that had the same thing happen to an older avicularia female. What's the deal? What might be happening? What might be causing this? What would cause an older spider to just rip off its own leg and bleed out? I don't know, but it got me. One of the things that came out when we were talking about old age, and this is, again, this is more me searching for information. This is, it's happened again. It's going to be eating me alive until we get some type of hypothesis as to why this might be happening. And I can't do that alone. I need to hear from others. So the first, you know, order of business for this one is, I would love to hear from anybody who has experienced this themselves with older spiders, whether it be males or females, any spiders actually, but I'm particularly interested to hear other people have experienced this with older females. Like, is this something that happens sometimes? I don't know. It's, again, this is only the second time it's happened to my collection out of the hundreds of spiders I've raised up. Doesn't seem to be very common, but now we've had two. What's the deal? And then the other thing that came up is, when we did the podcast about life expectancies and, you know, what we can expect, I did have some folks chime in and say, how do you know when they're old? How do you know when your female is about to die? Because I guess I had mentioned I knew it was coming. And they want to know, what are the signs of a tarantula that's suffering from old age? Now, let's just jump right into males, because I think that's the easier one. Mature males, they have one purpose. It's to go around and find the ladies. And what happens is, we talk a lot about how spiders and tarantulas are masters at conserving energy. They sit one spot, they grab their prey, they eat it. They're not trying to blow a lot of energy wandering all around. Males, it's totally different. At that point, they are going to wander around until they waste away to nothing. And that's why they need constant water. If you want to know how to keep your mature male alive longer, make sure they constantly, this is where it's super important to make sure they have water at all times. They are, it's blowing off a lot of energy wandering around. Make sure you feed them. I feed mine a little more often at that point, only because they waste away very, very quickly. And when you see a mature male waste away, you know it. They get very dull, drab, their exoskeletons start to wear away, their abdomens get super, super, super small. I've seen mature males where it's like, it's a raisin. I don't even know how they're still alive. They slow down, eventually become very lethargic, and then that you usually find them in a death curl when they've given up the ghost. So mature males, it's pretty obvious, but what about mature females? How do I know when my female spider is hitting old age? What are some of the signs? Well, one of the signs I've noticed is lethargy. I've noticed a lot of my females become very lethargic at the end. I'm thinking of, like, for one, my OBT female, when she went, was very, like, was moving very slow. I caught her out drinking one day, and we'll get to that in a moment. And she, like, normally if I disturbed her, she wasn't a bolter, but she would get back to her web hide pretty quickly. She kind of finished drinking, turned around, and walked very slowly back to her hide. I'm like, ooh, that's a little alarming. My Carabina versicolor, usually she was on her cork bark, standing loud and proud, or attached to the side of the enclosure. I started finding her, like, she'd be like, attach these things, but her body was sliding down over her legs, like she didn't have the strength to hold herself up. She slowed down a great deal. She was always a hot ticket. Like, I know a lot of people talk about their Carabina versicolors being so cute and tractable and tame. Mine was never tame. She was always, especially after she had her egg sac, she was very flighty and skittish. She slowed down a lot. I've been thinking of other spiders, my Harpactera caffrariana, same thing. She slowed down. She she was one that, again, wouldn't bolt, but she was very alert when you'd open up her enclosure. And I found that she would just kind of sit there, was, you know, very laid back, lethargic. So that's a sign. Another sign I found, and I've noticed a lot of my females will drink more often. A lot of spiders, it seems like when they're ill, they drink. I've seen this before, and we talked about when I did an episode about how I worried about some fossorials being exposed to maybe harmful bacteria when they're in the same enclosure, especially if it's a moisture-dependent fossorial. That water, that prey, the prey remains get in there, maybe create some type of concoction with bacteria that's not good for them, and they start to die, and you find a lot of them will come up, and you'll find them drinking from the water dish. I had this happen with a C. lividus. I had this happen with my P. aboricola. When she was a young female, I shared this story of how she, I thought she was going to die. She was out hanging right over a water dish, drinking, and then just went like flaccid, had no strength. And I brought her back to health. She molted. She ended up being fine, but it was a sketchy period. But I have found that a lot of them will come up and drink. So if you see your female spending a lot of time drinking when she normally doesn't, especially those older, like my, the queen as a prime example, the queen I caught drinking, she was one of the ones I caught drinking probably more than any other spider, but she was constantly drinking toward the end, which was one of the things. Again, she was lethargic. It's catching her a lot drinking in the water dish. That's when another thing is wear on the exoskeleton. Now, we talked about with the males, obviously in the tail end, they're at the end of their life cycle. They're running themselves ragged. They're trying to find a lady. They're not going to molt again. So those exoskeletons really get worn down. The hairs, the ceta wear away, they leave bald patches, and I've seen some males that literally don't have a lot of hair left on them before they die. Well, with the females, usually what happens is females, they can get a little ragged, especially the bigger ones, like Theraphosa species, the females will look pretty ragged before they molt, but for most females, yes, the colors dull out a bit, but usually the hairs stay, unless they're, you know, kicking. Obviously, we're not talking about them kicking the urticating hairs. A lot of them will kick those urticating hairs before molt, or just when they're rehoused, but I'm talking about the ones on their legs, around the carapace. I've noticed that the ones that are on their way out, those start to wear away. So again, this happened with the OBT. There was a lot of black exposed on her. I've had folks before contact me with photos of their female OBTs. Like, I don't know what's wrong with her. Look at her. And they're like bald in many places and the black showing through. That can sometimes be an indication that they are on their way out with old age because they're not molting again. Their bodies have said no more. They're not going to molt again. They're eventually going to pass away. So if you have a female that you know is older, she's very lethargic, there's a lot of wear on her exoskeleton, the ceta wearing away, that may be a sign that she's on her way out. Another one, and this is obviously goes without saying, decreased appetite. The queen at the end, she ate a couple, she had a molt, which I thought was going to be one to do her in, because a lot of times the mature females will die in that last molt, sadly. That's, I've heard from a lot of people, I've had it happen. You have a female, you go to check on her, she's half out of a molt, and that's it. So a lot of them, they just aren't able to pull themselves through that last molt, which obviously ends up costing them their lives. With the queen, she made it through the molt. She looked like she was doing okay, hardened up. She ate a little bit, and then I found that she was jumping on the crickets and just leaving them. She was killing them and leaving them, and I'm like, oh no, this is it. And then at the tail end, she wasn't showing any interest in crickets whatsoever. I was pre-killing them, dropping them right in front of her, hoping to God she would eat because I did not want her to go, and she wasn't. So becoming, you know, the decreased appetite is definitely an indicator with an older female, especially one that's been eating all along. And this is the thing, this is why it's important to kind of make a mental note of your tarantula's history. If you have a female that's always been a good eater and suddenly she's getting older and she slows down, that might be an indicator that she's starting to wind down. The other thing I've noticed with the females is the bad posture. And with bad posture, this can be tricky because we talk about the fact that sometimes like the stress posture looks bad. I have so many people send me pictures of their tarantulas in the stress posture going, oh my God, she ended a death crawl. What should I do? I have folks that send me ones in a death crawl that don't recognize it's a death crawl. And then there's when they just get in the awkward postures after they molt. However, I found that with the majority of my females that have been getting ready to, you know, pass from old age, they don't sit in a way that would scream, this is a healthy spider. So for example, I talked about the Carabina versicolor. She used to hang out on her cork bark, and sometimes they'll hang out and they kind of go into standby mode and they start to, like their bodies start to kind of droop a little bit, even though their claws are connected. She was doing this constantly. Every time I'd see her, she just looked weak. She was kind of like, some of the legs would be curled under while the other ones were holding onto the cork bark. The queen at the end was all scrunched up. Part of her, like one day I thought she was dead and I went in and kind of just gently touched her butt with a brush. Her legs, half of her legs were crawled under her. I'm like, oh no, this is it. And she kind of unfolded herself and started walking around with the Harpactra pulchripes, which I feel, and now that I'm thinking about it, if any spider deserved a name in my collection, it was this one. I can't believe I didn't name her, but that was one of the spiders I was trying to memorize the scientific name at the time, and she was just the H. pulchripes. But anyway, that's when I started recognizing that she might be on her way out, is when I recognized her posture just wasn't great. She was a lot of times like certain limbs folded under herself, sitting kind of cockeyed in the enclosure, sometimes when you shake an enclosure, they'll go up on their tiptoes and they kind of brace themselves and they kind of sway along with it. There was none of that. Like, your reflexes weren't good. So the body language has a lot to do with recognizing when they might be on their way out. Now, here's the problem. All of these signs I just mentioned and listed off are also indications of premolt for any spider. You know, the lethargy, the drinking a lot of water. One's in premolt, they're loading up because they're getting ready to pump all that fluid in between the two exoskeletons. Where on the exoskeletons? I just had a female Theraphosa blondie molt that she looked like crap before she molted, for lack of a better term. My apophysis, same thing. It was actually freaking me out a little bit because she really looked like crap. But if you're not pumping the food to them and they're not growing as quickly, they can wear down. So that's not necessarily a sign. In her case, in both their cases, it was a sign that they needed a molt. The decreased appetite, again, what do spiders do when they enter premolt? They stop eating. Bad posture. I've seen bad posture with just tarantulas hanging out, just being tarantulas. They do some weird stuff. So that's where it can get tricky. That's where it can be tough sometimes to recognize, is this spider truly on its way out? I know that years ago, the queen, I was convinced she was on her way out because she was showing a lot of these signs. And then she surprised me with her first molt in like 7 years. So in that instance, what I was probably seeing was just typical signs of premolt. But again, in the back of my mind, I knew that she was quite old, several decades old. So that could be a sign of it. It's tough. It's really difficult because, as we've said ad nauseum throughout the years of the podcast, they're not the most expressive animals. So you really have to be attuned. There are times, like with the Harpactera pulchripes, I was just attuned to recognizing she didn't look right. I looked at her so many times. She's one I admire a lot, and she was always very visible. That's the other thing. It can be difficult when you have ones that are burrowers because you don't see them out. Although I will say, and this is something I've noticed with burrowers, when they're on their way out, a lot of times they will surface or spend more time up on the surface, or you'll find them wandering around the surface. That's another indicator that something might be wrong. And I've heard from folks before, it's like, my old C. lividus, I don't get it. I've had her for 10 years. She's spending a lot of time on the surface now. Next thing you know it, the spider's dead and they're freaking out because they're like, I don't understand. What did I do wrong? Why did she come out? She might have just been on her way out. So I would love to hear, like, what signs have you guys seen? What spiders have, and again, this is me reaching out to the advanced keepers because I think a lot of us, even if you've been in this, I would consider somebody that's been in this hobby for 10 years, they're advanced. They've been doing this for a while, but that's not even long enough to have grown some of these species up to they've gone through their whole life cycle. If you're talking about a Gramostola, Faunapelma, Brachypelma species, they can live possibly 30, maybe even 40 years. We're not even there yet as far as seeing how long these guys can grow. It can be, we don't have the experience to recognize these signs because we haven't dealt with it before. But I would love to hear from folks. What are some of the signs you've noticed with them? Is there anything, has anybody, again, had their spider spontaneously rip off its own legs? That's something I had just about got to the point with that mystery because the video popped up the other day. I was looking up avicularia because I was going to do a rehousing video. And I'm like, how many of these things have I done? Because I'm not going to do another one if I've already done a bunch. And I had. And I looked up and found that video and I watched it again. I'm like, man, never did figure out what the heck was going on. But that's when I went back through the comments, saw some of those signs of it. And then it happens again. So I want to hear from you. What are your signs of, how do you recognize when your females are starting to go downhill? Or is it the same as mine? Are there any other things you've seen? And have you experienced one of these situations where a spider has spontaneously ripped its legs off? I don't think we're going to solve the mystery right now, but before I call it quits with all this stuff, I would hopefully like to come up with some type of idea of why this is happening. And if my hunch is correct, my hypothesis, not theory, my hypothesis is correct, that it might have something to do with older spiders. I don't know why they would do that, but who knows? I know I have a couple dogs now that are getting up there. One in particular, it's probably 15 or 16. And he does some weird stuff. The mind's not what it used to be. Now, obviously, a tarantula mind, not the same as a dog mind, but could it be a point where their whatever governs their behavior starts to break down? I don't know, but that's what I would like to find out. So that will do it for this one. Again, thank you for all, everybody that chimed in with a comment. Thank you for the individual with all the numbers. I really do appreciate it. I did not take it as snarky. I took it as feedback. That's what I need to hear because, again, it would I can be completely honest. Just to add to this, the easiest thing I could do is keep doing stuff for beginners because it's easy. And it's an easy low-hanging fruit as far as coming up with interesting podcast topics because you know that these people are going to keep coming in. The new folks are going to keep coming in. It's going to keep attracting them. But please understand, I do have to work. It's a juggling act for me. I do have to make sure I'm covering it. That's what I enjoy doing. I like when new people, I love hearing when people say, just today, checking my YouTube comments, somebody came on and said, great video. I just wanted to say, I just found your podcast. I've been in the hobby for 4 months and I'm loving going through it. I'm binging all the episodes. I'm finding out so much information. Thank you. That's what I do this for. So I do completely understand if people wander off and decide that, you know, this is, they no longer need this or no longer interest them. I think that's a natural evolution for some folks of spending time in the hobby. And speaking of that, I meant to do this weeks ago and completely forgotten. I haven't heard back from this individual yet. I'm not sure if they got the email, but I did receive it. This was from Janmark, who's been a hobby buddy. I've talked to Janmark several times over the years. But Janmark sent me an email that said, hi, Tom, it's been a long time since you've heard from me. The reason being, well, I don't need you anymore, LOL, but let me explain. You have always been my go-to guy for husbandry information, even before I actually got tarantulas. I would watch your videos in length and make sure I was ready and prepared. Whenever I got a new species and you have a video about it, I would watch the video. When someone wanted to get into tarantula keeping hobby and wanted information, no brainer, I would always recommend you. As I go through the tarantula keeping journey, I've learned new things on my own, learning from my own mistakes, correcting them, and discovering things and methods that work for me. Although I still watch your videos from time to time, however, now I only do it for entertainment. I appreciate everything you have taught me in the hobby, but I don't need you anymore because you taught me good. I know many people feel the same way. We're all little birds leaving the nest. I absolutely love this. I was saying it to, it's funny because I told Billy about it, and she's like, what? That's kind of messed up. I'm like, no, it's not messed up. That's always the point. Like, I always figured the majority of folks would fly a little birdie eventually. And I've heard from many people over the years. It's nice. I just heard from somebody that I used to talk to like 8 years ago. And they're like, hey, I'm still in the hobby. I check in every once in a while, but I feel bad. Don't feel bad. I'm not here. If I was here doing this for some type of monetary gain, and just to be clear, because every time I bring this up, people get freaked out. I'm not saying I don't get why people don't do it to make money. But if I was here doing this for monetary gain, if I was doing this to try to sell things, if I was doing this to try to pay my bills, yes, this would bother me because your ideas, you're not losing somebody, a student. I see it as losing a student who has graduated on. I would see it as losing a customer. You guys aren't customers to me. You are fellow hobbyists. Many of you are just as much experience as I have now. And when people do, like Janmark, move off, I see it the same way as when I graduate a group of seniors that I've worked with for 4 years. Does it hurt to see them go? Yeah, you miss them. You miss the conversations. I love talking with you guys. I love hearing your experiences. But on the other hand, you're proud because you're like, hey, I helped them out. That I helped them get to that point. And that's how I feel with this. So Billy was like, really? That didn't bother you? I'm like, not at all. I love hearing stuff like that. So again, just it kind of works in with that all that topic. Am I still floored? That was one thing that I really had to adjust with is I honestly thought the majority of folks would be like Janmark, that eventually they outgrow me and they move on. It never bothered me. And now I'm realizing there's folks I've been talking to the 8 years that are still listening to my videos, are still watching my videos, still taking the time to comment, which I appreciate, still listening to the podcast. And that's awesome to me because it means I had that longevity. I'm able to produce something that at least you find interesting. But if you find it's time to move off, don't feel guilty at all. I completely understand. That's the natural order of things. Check in every once in a while. Let me know how you're doing. I love, like, again, Janmark, I hope you're hearing this. I do really appreciate you chiming in. And I'll continue to try to put stuff out there that is useful for both, or at least beginners and advance. And advance, folks, again, this is no joke. This isn't just lip service. I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you're doing. I want to hear about your experiences. They mirror mine if they're different. An example, I just did something on Dolichothelae diamantinensis. I mentioned in the video that they were very hardy, and I had a couple people chime in and go, I've had a lot of trouble with them. Enough so that I realized I almost want to retract that statement, because apparently I had good luck with them, but other people don't. And I say good luck because it means it doesn't necessarily mean I was better at keeping it. Something I did worked out. That's the type of stuff I want to hear, because those are the comments I pin so that people can see somebody say something different than me. I don't want it to be like, here's Tom. He says they're hardy, so they're hardy. And if yours die, you screwed up. No. Other people need to hear that. So that's why I want you guys to chime in. Feel free, guys. I am hoping beyond hope, that this is going to lead to a bunch of comments from folks telling me what they want to hear from the channel, what types of things they want. Remember, if you want to hear species specific, I can do more of those. What are some things you like to hear about? Please keep in mind. And maybe what I'll do is I'll just read them all so people know I am reading them. I will mention if it's something that I'm not ready to do, because I'm never going to go out there half-cocked and put out garbage information because I didn't do the research or don't have the experience. Please chime in. Let me know so we can keep this thing going as long as we can. And we can make sure that people feel like it's worth listening to. I mean, if I can hold on to you, advanced guys, I want to hold on to you, advanced guys. If not, believe me, I understand. So that will do it for this one. As always, you can find me at thomasbigspiders.com. You can find me, Spotify is a great place. You can throw down a quick comment. Unfortunately, I can't respond back, but as you see, I go back and I can respond through the podcast, which is the easiest way for me to do it. Hoping to get a bunch there. YouTube, I have not put up a video this week. I actually heard from the folks at Tarantula Cribs. A lot of times they'll send me some enclosures and ask me for feedback, and they've been really good with taking some of my feedback on them. And I got some enclosures in that I've been kind of toying with and giving my thoughts on. And I really think that's cool of them, honestly, to actively solicit feedback from folks. They actually, a little over a year ago, they sent some in. I came back with some comments, and it was so cool to get a box in with some things. And I'm like, oh, they actually made those changes. These work for me now. Like, because everybody has their own thing. And I'm still putting together that this summer, the big video for this summer, the big video I'm going to be working on this summer, we already did the podcast, is going through the enclosures and being able to really show off some of the things that are out there. And for me, it's like, I have my way of keeping certain species. And because of that, certain enclosures just don't work for me because they don't offer the amount of substrate I need or whatever it may be. But I thought it was really cool to see some things that they had changed up that really made them more versatile, I think. And I was going to do a couple rehousing videos with them because it's like, all right, we got cages. I have to set them up, see how they work. Might as well do rehousing videos. But I spent so much time mixing dirt and setting up enclosures. I have, let me turn around here. Roughly a dozen enclosures set up. So we got a lot of rehousings coming up that I'll be able to talk about and, you know, talk about care for them. But I didn't get around to actually doing the rehousing. So hopefully we'll get something done this week and up for the folks that are looking for stuff on YouTube. Guys, that will do it for this one. Again, I really do appreciate every piece of feedback I get from you all. I really do. It helps really guide me moving ahead and how I'm going to, you know, topics and how I'm going to handle things. And again, adds to the information I'm giving. So please continue with it. I'm done talking. I'm going to go downstairs, walk my dogs, and tell Billy how my podcast started off with a continuation of our discussion last week. That'll do it for me, guys. As always, stay safe. We'll catch you all next time.